This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, you've made the cut. It's awful, but I'm here, JT, along with my buddy Aaron from the North. Aaron, how are you?
I am amazing, and that wasn't even that bad.
No, not bad. It's not bad at all. So if you've been listening along with us throughout this whole PTBN Greatest WWE Wrestler Ever project, you know that Aaron and myself have done a series of podcasts and a couple of pod blasts looking at our thoughts, how we're going to work our list, breaking down the candidates. We call them Making the Cut. Well, now that the list is complete and the ballots are submitted and all that, we're now going to talk about who made our cut on these podcasts. So as you're listening to this, these are pre-recorded, so just know that the list is either fully out, maybe partially out. I have no idea when we're going to release these. So in some shape, form, or manner, you'll know most of the list probably by the time you hear these. But this is me and Aaron walking through our lists, right?
Yes, and I'm never going to release mine aside from these podcasts, so who knows when. You'll never see it.
Yeah, that'll be it. So this is your only chance to learn about Aaron's list.
And about my life, really, because yes. We're going to get into that too.
True. We're going to get into a lot of things, I'm sure. So why don't we get started?
Yeah.
All right, so we're going to go ahead and get into our actual list here. Do you want to go first this time? I went first in the honorable mentions. Or do you want to keep the cadence we have?
No, I'll go first.
What kind of pause was that? That was awful.
A long one.
That was awful. All right, you go first.
I should have been vamping.
That was revenge.
That was a revenge pause. Yeah, I'll go first. Why not? My number 100.
My number 100. Oh, I'm sorry. You go.
Oh, no. Doing that, though. My number 100
is that Borat?
Borat would be more like, wah-wah-wee-wah. Okay. Yes, gashamaz.
My wife.
She is a dumb. Yes, my number 100 is an equally stupid character, and it's Santino Marella.
Ah, very stupid. Yes.
Yeah, I think he is the best comedic wrestler they've ever had. I don't think there's anybody better than him. I don't even think there's anybody close in terms of being able to pull off comedy in a world where they are terrible at comedy.
Yeah.
Like, they are just awful at comedy. And so for him to be able to come in and be legitimately funny most of the time is a huge feat. And then he's got some jump up moments. He's got a ton of skits that are fun. I think back to his tea with Sheamus, mm-hmm. Kozlov. Even just thinking about it is funny. All his stuff with his with his girlfriends is My Maria and My Maria is that and Glamorella was fun.
Yeah.
The Honk-a-meter was fun. I always liked when he was the champion of something because, like, he's such a useless champion, but you know, he made it work. And then he's got the two moments that, I mean, are legitimately great moments. The end of the Royal Rumble 2011 and the being in the finals against Daniel Bryan in the Elimination Chamber in 2012. Yeah. And I mean, I don't know if this is crazy, but I think there was probably some sort of money in some sort of a run with him because he was – I don't know about an extended run on top or anything, but he was completely believable in those moments.
Oh, for sure.
Where you wouldn't think based on who he is and what he does. And he was constantly over. I mean, every house show I ever went to that he was on, he was consistently one of the biggest pops of the night. And then when you look at his work rate, I don't think he's anywhere near as bad as some people will tell you he is in the ring. I don't think he's amazing or anything, but I don't think he's horrible. He's not fantastic, but he's got some good, like, kind of spotty things, spots that, like, got over with the crowd. The cobra, the stupid salute as he did the headbutt, all his movement around the ring. I thought he was actually a pretty good seller, too. So, I mean, I kind of chose the 100 spot as a vanity spot almost, but I don't actually think he'd be too far off 100 if I were to rate it honestly.
Yeah, I like Santino a lot too. He was definitely one of my favorites. I didn't put him on the list here. I think this more has to do with the time period. I don't know. I have a hard time with all that time. I don't know how to better say it.
like it's too long. You don't like the time. You have a problem with time in general as a concept. Like
07 to 12. Nah. So that's
a
what
lot. It's a 7 year, but 5 year stretch.
His I don't know. His initial debut match was a really cool moment, even though his character sucks for a while. When he comes in Italy and he Mamma Sentino Marella defeats Umaga. Like that was really cool. Something you didn't always see where he wins the title. I agree with you with those two big moments, the Chamber and the Rumble fake out. What did you think of the Cobra?
Look, it's stupid. It exposes the business, but it never mattered in his matches. I know that really kind of sounds hypocritical because I know in other instances I've been like the sledgehammer takes me out of the match and makes me hate it. But like, I don't know, his matches to me almost exist on like this other plane that like where reality is kind of like suspended. Like if Triple H hit him with a sledgehammer, I guess I'd be okay with it.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. The Cobra thing just bugged me a little bit. But he was like, it became too much of a crutch for him by the end, I guess is my point.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
He leaned on it like way too much. Didn't he have something funny with Jared from Subway too? I know Punk had the funny line with Jared from Subway, but didn't he have one too? Didn't he have with him or something?
Was he like, you look at the child porn?
It's something with Lawler. You sit there and eat your Subway sandwich. Remember, it was something. Maybe it wasn't Jared. Was it Lawler with the Subway sandwich or something?
I don't remember.
It was something really funny. That was his peak, though. It was the Maria, like, that stretch after Glamorello when he's doing the Honkameter and all that shit. And great comedy wrestler. Like you're saying, probably one of the best ever. And he was legit in the ring, too. I just felt like they aired too much to comedy late.
When he went face, like, and it's like everything else. When they don't know how to do a subtle face.
Right.
So, like, he was way funnier as a heel. And he was still funny as a face. But
it's like – but. Yeah, it's like a richer man's doink, right? Like, he goes face and just kind of loses what made him so great because he's just super goofy and friendly.
But then he'll show up at a backstage skit and be legitimately funny, though.
Right.
Because his delivery was actually really good.
Right, he can't help not be funny.
Yeah. So, that's my 100.
All right. That's my nothing. So my 100 is probably a guy, like, some of the guys I mentioned, my honorable mention, you could maybe get in this spot, but... another one of my all-time favorites, and I just make no bones about having him here. And some people may actually have him higher, I don't know. But that's Ken Shamrock. Do you have him listed?
I have him higher.
Okay, great. Love Robo Shamrock. I love all Shamrock. Like, I'm just a big mark for Shamrock. I know he was a fucking debacle on the mic. Like I understand. He's just a fucking disaster. But I think it's actually endearing about him that he's this dumb fucking meathead that can't talk, but just goes out there and murders guys. Like, I love him as a face in 97. I love him as a heel in 98. And... you know, he was a little soft toward the end in 99, but he was on fumes while they were refreshing the roster. But, I mean, there was a time where he was really the best worker probably they had for a stretch, maybe at least him and Owen Hart, during, like, that really dark days of the Attitude Era when the in-ring wasn't really a concern. But I thought 97 Shamrock was a ton of fun. Like, him being in that Canadian Stampede main event was big, like, that they elevated him that high that quickly. I thought he was a great referee at WrestleMania 13. I liked him with Vader in his debut match. And then him and Rock is a seminal feud. Like, everyone talks about Rock's feud with Triple H as being, like, the one that kind of legitimized and brought them up to the main event. But I thought Shamrock and Rock is what got Rock even to that point, like, into the picture. Like, they had such a great feud, a really great rivalry, where they wrestled a ton of times on pay-per-view, but all in different settings. Like, they didn't just have, like, 9 one-on-one matches. They had one-on-one. They had Survivor Series. They had another 10-man. They had tag match. They had the King of the Ring. You know, like, it was all different formats and settings where they would clash. And I like that Shamrock finally got the last laugh at King of the Ring by winning the tournament when he beat him. So I thought that was really cool, too. I love the dungeon match and stuff with Owen. Like, that's a lot of fun in late 98. And then comes Robo Shamrock, the great night on Raw where he destroys everyone and wins the IC belt. The team with Boss Man's a little soft. And then you get it to 99 with all the Val and all that shit. But I don't know. He's just a guy I love. I always wish he came back. I was always sad he never made one last run. Him versus Angle was always a dream match that I wanted to see. That never happened. And I just love when he'd snap. Like, him and Bulldog at SummerSlam 97 is a lot of fun, too. So, just a lot of cool stuff.
Yeah, I like Ken Shamrock a lot. He's a guy that probably should have he should finish higher on everyone's list if they had given him the chance,
right,
to kind of run with stuff a bit more. I think he also has a huge impact on the business. Like, I mean, everybody taps out now.
That was it. That's where it started, tapping out.
Yeah.
And that's
huge. That's almost an industry, like a very revolutionary thing in the industry that really made submission holds a lot more interesting and fun to watch, because you finally got the visual of the guy giving up as opposed to just the referee ringing the bell, right?
And I think was Billy Gunn the first guy to tap out on TV? I think he was.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. It was. So, yeah, like, I have him higher. I like his stuff a lot. I think he's actually really good in the ring to watch. Like, very fluid and very believable in terms of what he does. But, like, yeah, you're right. He probably doesn't have the highest of highs and stuff like that. But on his influence alone, he goes higher for me. And he was fun to watch, believable. So, at 100 for you, I mean, for me, you're even shortchanging him a bit.
But. Yeah, probably. Maybe I should have had him a little bit higher. I just kind of dumped him there and left him there, you know? I'm like, here's my 100, because 100's the guy you really like, right? That's the gimmick.
Well, I just remember you talking about maybe including him, and I was like, well, what do you mean maybe?
I think that was me just, like, covering myself in case everyone thought I was stupid.
In case Chad got mad at you.
Yeah. No, I love Ken. Like I said, I know his promos are soft, but he's got a lot of fun moments and the dog food and all that. And those chair shots he takes from Bulldog are fucking disgusting.
Sick.
Yeah, that's why he's a mess now. A super nice guy, actually. He was we ran into him at WrestleCon last year, WrestleMania in Orlando. And I couldn't even go talk to him because he was literally talking to the same guy for like an hour and a half. Like, I just wanted to go shake his fucking hand and talk to him for a few minutes, but he kept engaging everyone and talking for so long. And then we interviewed him for the podcast a couple of years ago too. This is a super nice guy, really, really down to earth. I mean, a little delusional, but most fighters are. But he's a really, really super nice guy. Cool guy.
But I mean, delusional how? Like, I mean, in terms of like...
Like, he thinks he could still be like UFC champion. Like, that kind of delusional.
Oh, okay, yeah. Okay.
like that.
Got it.
Yeah.
Got it.
Like, I think Roger interviewed him for the Sports Lounge. He talked about that fight he had coming up with Kimbo Slice and how he was going to kind of like get rolling again after that. You know what I mean? Like, he just a little delusional about where he was in his life and career, and that's all.
Right. Yeah, I he's a guy who should go into the Hall of Fame. You know, like, he's a guy I could even believe coming back for a little bit. Working some lower card things. I don't think it'd be so crazy.
No, I wish he did. I wish he had made one more run at some point. All right, who's your 99?
99 is a guy who a lot of people kind of shit on. But I think he's got enough good stuff in the bank to kind of just slip onto the list, and that's Cody Rhodes. I think he's a guy that – I don't think he's the best worker in the company, but I think he's not just the Cody line. Right?
He is the Cody line, and my Cody line is outside my top 113.
The reason I have him here is because I think he's a guy who, no matter what bullshit they gave him, he did well with it. Like, if you look at his character development, like, he's kind of bland as hell face. I thought he was quite interesting as part of the legacy. I really like that legacy team. Not so much their output, but I like the idea of that team.
Right.
I really dug the dashing Cody Rhodes stuff, and I love that he got hurt and basically became Dr. Doom.
Yeah.
Like, I like that it went character to character like that. And then they stuck him with just being the guy with the mustache.
Right.
Which I thought was terrible. Like, you go from all this development of being Dr. Doom to being the guy with the mustache, but he still ran with it. Rhodes Scholars was fun. And then I think he had a really nice little run when he became kind of the guy standing up to the authority.
Yep.
With Randy Orton. His match with Orton on that Raw is really, really strong. And then he does that tag team with Goldust, which I think is phenomenal at the time. Their matches with the Shield are great. And I think they kind of – after the Shield, they kind of dropped the ball with them a bit. But I really like that variety in the team. I liked Stardust at first. I think it overstayed its welcome completely.
By far, yeah.
But I think if you look at – I mean, his characters, if you look at that, that's a lot of variety for a guy. Like, an awful lot of variety for a guy. And he was good as a singles guy, and he was as good as a tag guy. And then you get into, like, kind of like the bulk of his work. I think he did some really nice work at the Rumble in 09, being one of those guys who helps Orton win. Yeah. I think his feud with Rey is really strong. I mean, Rey helps it obviously a lot. But his match with Rey at WrestleMania 27 is one of the better matches on a really terrible show. And I think the one the next month at Extreme Rules is even better. And then we get into the stuff we just talked about in terms of, like, I like his feud with Big Show. It's not the best, but I like him making fun of the Big Show being a failure. And I even like how he wins the title with Big Show stepping on the table. I know it's kind of dumb, but like it makes sense, so it works for me. The Orton stuff is great. The Shield stuff is great. I think he's strong in the ladder match at WrestleMania 31. So he's got enough good match stuff to kind of slip on for me. And I think he's hurt by the fact that he doesn't have that tip-top match, although the Orton one comes close.
And the you could argue the Goldust versus the Shield is pretty high.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, definitely.
That's a great tag match.
But I tend to value the singles matches a bit more.
Yeah.
I think the Stardust eventually ends up hurting him, but I don't know how much of that is his fault. Like,
he was so checked out. I mean, yeah, it went on way too long. Cody to me is a guy. I'm sorry, got to finish.
No, go on, go on.
I think he's just a guy that gets hurt by his potential in my eyes. Like, I remember when he gave that Hall of Fame speech and everyone was like wowed by what a good talker he was. You know what I mean? And then I feel like we didn't see that for a while. Like, the stuff with Holly is just so blah. And then Legacy's cool, but then when they turn and they're out with Orton and it's just them against like DX, like that just goes on forever. You know?
Yeah.
And then Dashing gets good again, and I love the Doctor Doom stuff. But again, it always feels like right when he's on the cusp, like they kind of would make him switch things up, you know? Like, I feel like he was always ready to break through, and then it would just switch. And then Road Scholars was fun, too, but then the blow-off when they split up never went anywhere, you know? Like, it didn't really push Rhodes like they should have, and Sandow got hotter later. I love the Brotherhood stuff, but Stardust I just could not get into. And I know, you know, he was trying and everything else, but it just fell really flat for me. And the end just felt so, like, he just wanted, he had I'm not a big believer in go away heat, but he had it with me by the end of there.
Right.
And I'm glad that he went out there and he played the cards right and has made himself into a name and a star. I think part of the issue too, and this is really superficial, he's got a great look, but he's just not. I don't know if it's the knee pads or the legs or what it is, but like it is something, or the elbow, like something made him not look like a world champion level guy to me when he was there.
Yeah, he's too thin and lanky.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I guess if you want to be a jerk, you could say that.
I mean, that's just what it is. Like, I didn't see him ever getting to be a top guy because of that.
There's never been a top guy that looks like him.
No.
There's probably never been a guy that kisses like him. We don't know that. Okay.
Now, I do think he's another one that if he comes back in like 2 years,
it'll be big.
Yeah.
Yeah, he'll be big. Like, and I think too, like just to finish off on him, like I think his work in the ring is actually quite good too. I think he's pretty crisp. He's got good strikes. His moves look good. The things he strings together are good. His finish was always nice. His selling was okay.
Yeah.
Like I don't think he's the median line for me. I think he's a bit above that, which just sneaks him on my list.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. He's okay.
But it's more the character stuff.
No, he is a really good character. He is.
Yeah.
Okay. My 99's a guy we mentioned back in the honorable mentions. I had said I brought him on the list to replace Larry Zbyszko at the last minute, and that's Jim Duggan.
Oh.
Great pro wrestler. Zero matches. So I could not justify having him much higher. All of his best work came pre-WWF. And I think maybe he could have had something good, and then he gets fired for the coke, and by the time he comes back in late 87, I don't know if the time off or what, he seemed like he had just given up on it. You know, like early 88, he's all right, and then he's got the stuff with Andre. And then after that Andre feud, like, what does he do? He's just a guy, you know, just a character, which is fine. It makes him recognizable. It makes him well-known. Good promo. You know, memorable, ho, still done today. USA, the flag, the board. He's made millions off of that gimmick. So good on him. But he just never even had, like, a feud. You know, like what did he do post-Andre?
He fought Dino Bravo. He feuded with him.
I mean, I guess Quake and then Slaughter for bits. But always then, he was always the John the Baptist to Hogan's Jesus. You know, he always kind of was the lead guy in the feud before Hogan took over the feud.
He's the face gatekeeper.
Yeah.
Who would never actually lose.
And never actually feud with anyone. He would just, like, wrestle guys. Like, I guess Quake is probably the closest. But even then, they never really have, like, any kind of blow-off. And Yoko murders them, so that was kind of a mini-feud at the end. And then he's got the two-week thing with Sean that was self-contained to Raw. So, again, he's had moments and stuff, but he just... Like, where are the feuds? Where are the big matches? Like, they just don't exist. Like, he was never in a main event, really. Not even once.
Yeah, for me, I have him much higher, but it's got nothing to do with his matches. It's got everything to do with how over and how crazy he was as a character.
Sure. To me, that gets him on the list.
Yeah, but he's more over then than almost anybody is today. They would kill for his heat.
Effort.
Is he the first guy? Is he the first guy over to catchphrase the Ho?
I don't know. Hogan had to be doing his shit before Ho, right?
Yeah, but nobody was chanting along with his shit.
Yeah, I guess not. Yeah, maybe.
So, Innovator.
No, Weasel may have actually been the first one.
Weasel, yeah, okay. Fair enough. I don't know. I really dig Duggan. I think he's a lot of fun. I won't ever argue that he's a good wrestler, per se. Like, I definitely couldn't argue that with you. But I think he's a fun brawler, and he's so memorable to me that he gets on the list. Higher.
Yeah.
Is that a big yawn?
Yep. That's exactly how I feel.
Great. Glad I'm boring you.
You're not. Duggan is. It's just not that... I don't know. It's not up there. Like, I can't remember matching it longer than, 3 minutes. You know,
that's a good thing. You don't want him longer than 3 minutes.
Yeah, I know, but they're always just nothing. The matches are just nothing.
No, there's something, and then he gets disqualified or counted out.
Yeah, I don't know. He's fine. He's on the list. He's very... His biggest trait is he's an iconic character with an iconic catchphrase, and like you said, it's very over. There's just nothing else to him besides that. In my opinion, tough guy.
Ho!
Get off of my ass. All right, who's your 99, 98?
98, we talked about him on our honorable mention show, and that's Larry Z.
Mm-hmm.
So go on with your 98.
We talked about him as well, and that's John Morrison.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we're cutting through this.
Okay, made the cut on that one.
They made the cut on the people that didn't make the cut.
Yeah.
Okay, so look, I'll do 96 and 97, 96 at the same time.
Okay.
97 is Dash Wilder, and 96 is Scott Dawson.
Interesting.
So the Revival guys.
All right, talk to me about the Revival. They are not on my list. So.
Yeah, to me, they're the best tag team they've ever had. I don't even think it's it might be close with the people I have right above them.
Yeah.
But Power and Glory. They don't have anything on the main roster, so that'll be their knock. But in their 2 years on NXT, their record for excellence is astonishing. I think their match, the takeover match in Toronto against Gargano and Ciampa, is probably the best tag match the company's ever had.
Mm-hmm.
And their match with them at the earlier Brooklyn show is also up there. Their matches with American Alpha are also incredible, and all their work in the Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Tournament the year before was fantastic. I think on that strength alone, they make the list, and for their potential, they make the list.
Mm-hmm.
They just don't have the body work, which is what ends up hurting them. But I have a rule on my list that if you have a 5-star match, you make it. So they make it.
Yeah, I saw the Brooklyn match live, and that was fucking fantastic. I mean, we were just going crazy with all the near falls and innovative in every way. I like them. Yeah, they just don't have enough for me to make the list. That's what it comes down to. I just had other guys I can't bump for them. I get it.
Yeah. It's like I just can't justify putting – I can't justify – like if you take Cody Rhodes as my 99 –
right.
He has nothing close to their match, their tag match, or even guys who just missed the cut for me. They just don't have anything close to that. So, to me, it's an easy call to put them on the list. I just couldn't put them much higher, which is I would have liked to, but I couldn't.
Okay. All right. So my 97 is Yokozuna. Do you have him?
I do.
All right.
Where do I have him though? I have him a bit high, quite a bit higher.
Okay. Interesting case to me. Like, I can see the justification to leave him off, but I definitely think he deserves to be on. I mean, he is, he was the top guy during a time where it's hard to be the top guy. Like, just a very down period. Not a character that could pop or easily get over in a way. When you look at his, overall, character and, you know, he didn't really talk. He's got Fuji. He's a big fat Japanese guy. Like, it was just, the cards were against him, right? In many ways. But he made it work. Like, I thought he was a nasty heel. He was a vicious heel. I liked his matches with Bret Hart were really good. It took a lot to be a dominant heel champion during that stretch. And I thought he did it well. Even the stuff with Luger, like SummerSlam 93 is a really good match. For a big guy, he could really move. His bumping and selling was great. He moved it. He'd have these bursts that were impressive for a guy of his size, which I thought was cool too. So, yeah, just a very memorable look, a very memorable character. Probably, probably made me hung on a little too long toward the end. It was kind of sad at the end where he was just wicked fat, and then they did the fucking forklift thing and all that. Like, if he just kind of disappeared after, you know, maybe him and Owen have the tag title run, he turns and maybe just Vader beats him once and then he's gone, something like that. I think that 96 stuff, and then he breaks the fucking turnbuckle against all, like, all that stuff kind of weighs it down. And not much, obviously, a promo, but he didn't need to. His character was so good. He just had a good, easy chemistry with Carnett and Fuji. I loved him and Owen, where Owen would just be the smarmy douche, and Yoko was just the muscle that could back it up, and Owen knew it, so he could do whatever he wanted. That's you know, a lot there about Yoko. What do you think?
A guy at the time who I really didn't appreciate. I hated him at the time, and I don't even mean as like I hate you as a heel. He right. kind of turned me off the product at the time. Now, looking back when I watch his stuff, I actually quite enjoy a lot of what I see from him. I thought he was so imposing, like much more imposing than almost anybody since Andre the Giant, really. He was huge, and he really had a superstar aura about him. He knew how to move around the ring. You're right, he was a dominant heel in a time where they don't usually do that. I think his match with Bret at WrestleMania 9 is actually really good.
Very good, like, yep.
Like the way they approach it, like with Bret like attacking him on the offense, but Yoko carries his end completely. Mm-hmm. You kind of touched over most of his good things. I think he's hurt a little bit by like not having any really great matches.
Yeah.
I think the Undertaker stuff weighs him down a little bit. And the Luger WrestleMania 10 is one of the worst matches in WrestleMania history.
I mean, looking back, they would have been better served just to have him and Bret, because I think he was so gassed by the time they got to the main event that they just had nothing in the tank, you know? If they would have just had Bret have to beat Owen to get the title match or something like that, would have been enough. But him going like 20 whatever with Luger in this snooze fest, and then it's sapping him of his energy for the main event, it hurts, you know? It definitely hurts.
Yeah, and I think you're right. Like, and that's just it. He was saving his energy for the main event, but it still didn't do anything.
Right, yeah.
He still didn't do it. I think he's great for his size. A wonderful crescent kick. And you know, everything he did looked like it killed you. Like that leg drop he did was amazing.
Yep.
Like you just dead.
And there's some bonsai splashes he would do to jobbers. Where, I mean, he just fucking landed on them.
Yeah. And a lot of – he was actually a really good seller too.
Yeah,
like when he was getting shit kicked at him, he was very good. I do feel he relied way too heavily on nerve holds at times, which would drive me crazy. But he's really good for a guy his size. So I really do have him – I have him quite a bit higher. We'll talk about him later too, I guess. There's not much more to say about him though. Like great – he had just a really solid run with a weak back end.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'd agree with that. I think that's fair. Yeah, that's about it. 97. All right, my 96 is you did yours, right? Was the other Dawson guy. Dawson and Creek. All right, so my 96 is a bit of a lightning rod throughout this whole project. He's a guy that I considered not having on, and then every time we went to move him down, I'm like, he's done this, and he's done that, and he should probably be on the list, is Kane. So just inside the top 100, he sneaks in. Do you have him on? Did you end up putting him on?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
And I have him quite a bit higher.
Oh, interesting. We dove into him like really deep on making the cut.
Yeah.
So we don't have to go too far in depth, but I think he's good enough to me that he has to be in there. He's been around long. He's compiled enough moments and matches. Really memorable character. Great debut. And enough good stuff to sneak in the list. The bad stuff is what weighs him down. But like when I was comparing him to like a Bigelow, a Zabisco, a Del Rio toward the bottom of my list, like I just felt like he was the guy that should get the benefit of the doubt and be sliding in here. But I had this bottom five pretty much set for a while, other than the Duggan swap with my 95, who we'll get to, and then Kane, Yoko, Morrison, Shamrock. Like, those were always kind of my bottom five guys, just being into the list.
Yeah, Kane goes higher for me because when I actually started looking at his output, he actually does have a pretty decent output of good matches. He doesn't have any great matches, but he's got a lot of good. So it was hard to rate him lower than guys that didn't have anywhere near that output. So I do have him higher. So I'm going to save talking about him till I get to him.
Okay.
Because as much as, like, you're right, he's been a lightning rod and people talk about not having him, like, the more I thought about it, the more I couldn't. Like, I had him, like, at 99 for the longest time, but then I started moving him up. Should he have been doing the stink face as a heel?
No, but the threat of his ass would be enough, right?
Right. Like, he could murder a man with that ass.
He could suffocate someone who wanted to motorboat it.
Yeah, right? And someone wants to motorboat it. I can think of a guy right now.
You can?
It's the same guy as before.
You can think of someone who wants to motorboat his ass.
Yeah, yeah, for sure, for sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Very good. So, no, I think you should have covered it up. I do. I think the big highlight of his facedom was the ass. I just thought it looked stupid. He's supposed to be this big, vicious, murdering heel, and he's out there in this ridiculous outfit. And he could have just worn the tights without, like, the diaper wrap. You know what I mean? He could have just worn, like, tights if he wanted to still kind of show off the ass. Yeah, I don't know.
I feel like part of the problem was that he looked so ridiculous to begin with, though.
Correct.
Like, with the blonde hair and when he wore that leather suit.
He didn't change his look enough. Like, I'm a big believer that when you turn, you need to change it up. And he didn't. He just still looked like... And in fairness, I mean, he kept the look that he had when he was a heel when he went face earlier in the year. Right. So this is actually his original heel look. But yeah, I thought he didn't do enough to mix it up and make it look serious and different. And it didn't help, too, that Triple H pretty much cuckolded him, like, immediately by taking full credit and saying Rikishi just did it on his behalf. And that pretty much is it. But then they kind of reboot him a bit, and he brings Haku in, and they set up a pretty cool tag feud with Taker and Kane. But then that doesn't go anywhere either. That I think Haku or Rikishi, one of them got hurt, and then that was pretty much it. And then he comes back as a face. I mean, and that's...
Just happy again. Yeah. He's happy to be the dancing Samoan again after all that.
So what did he have anything good like post that return? Like I can't even think. I know he's got the tag run with Scotty. I can't think of any great matches he had.
No, it's all. I think the year 2000 is the end of his like real ability in the ring. Not that he sucked or anything, but like they never really put him in a position to have great matches after that.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I can't even think of like 2002, 2003. I mean, I guess he did the stuff. I don't even know what he did. He's just kind of around.
Wasn't he part of the hot lesbian action?
Yeah, he dressed up as the lesbian.
Right.
Yeah, and then I hate the fucking tag run with Scotty. I mean, it was kind of like a thank you for your service kind of thing, but it was I don't know.
Was he in Iraq?
Yeah, I mean, he wrestled with Too Cool, so.
Who had a worse team with Scotty, him or Albert?
Oh, Albert. Because at least Rikishi and Scotty had the history. It just felt so – I guess it just felt like so played out. Like those two guys as tag team champions in 2004 felt like so old. Astro, he had the shit with Piper. Well, he had all the stuff with Billy and Chuck. That was kind of around the same time as HLA with Rico. And Rico ended up being his partner and all that shit. And then he also had the stuff with Piper and Sean O'Hare and Snuka with the coconut. And then the tag run, and that was pretty much it. Released in July 16. So anyway, we went pretty deep into Fatu here. But I think that was pretty much his. I think this is a good spot for him because he doesn't have that great moment or match or say he's got a ton of great moments. 2000's his best year, but he also backs that up with some really good head shrinker stuff. I think low 90s is pretty good for him. What do you have? Do you want to wait to reveal that?
Well, we'll wait. It's not far.
Okay.
I what's his best singles match? For me, it's probably The Rock, Survivor
Series. Oh, I forgot to mention that. I love that match. Yeah, but see, that's a good part of his heel run, that match there. That is a hidden gem. Yes, one of my favorites. I would say either that or maybe the Triple H match or maybe the Val Cage, which itself is actually just kind of okay, but the finish is so great.
It's Flash.
King of the Ring, he goes to the finals, but it's kind of a disappointing run.
That King of the Ring is like the biggest like fantasy rebook King of the Ring, right? Like,
Yeah. It might be one of the biggest fantasy rebook like pay-per-views of all time. It's
right.
It's so much talent. And they're using it all on the roster. It's not even a situation like they weren't using who they had like in some of those like 95 pay-per-views or whatever.
Right. The dark matches.
Right. I mean, they're using everyone on the show. It's just the booking was so stupid.
Well, then you got Crash Holly advancing instead of someone who's good.
Right. Right. And you're eliminating Jericho or Angle guaranteed in the first round, you know, and you don't give us Eddie Benoit in a second round, so you give us Crash and Val. Was that whatever it was? Rikishi and Val, whatever it was.
Some bullshit. Yeah.
Yeah, it was all weird. So anyway, I think this is pretty commensurate where it should be.
Yeah. And he was, you know, for a big guy, he really knew how to move around a ring.
Oh yeah.
His stuff looked good. His selling looked good.
Like, he was the 360, really... the 360 on the clothesline.
Yeah, even when it made no sense, like Matt Hardy's clothesline and he's doing a 360.
Yeah, no, he's just, yeah, he was a really good worker. He was. And he, great charisma, too.
Excellent crescent kick.
Tremendous crescent kick.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So that getting you your number 93.
93. Well, we're going to do 93 and 92 together.
Oh, God. You and these tag teams.
This is how little I think of tag teams that I managed to put them on the list. 92 and 93 for me are Bubba Ray and Devon Dudley. I wasn't originally going to add these guys to the list. And then I watched through most of 2000 and 2001 and it stopped making sense to leave them off because as much as I'll stand by the Rockers, the Usos and the Revival.
The Usos. Whenever I think of Usos, I always think of Bret Hart. Which is a weird connection, but hear me out. When he was GM for that I don't know if it was the night he was GM for one night or I get that whole like 5 year period is like a fucking blur to me, like 09 right. to 14. But was he actually GM for stretch? Wasn't he like every week?
It's a blind spot okay. for me.
So he had the Hart Dynasty come out, and they're thinking we're king shit because Uncle Bret is the GM. And he's like, no, I'm going to make it tough on you. You're going to have to fight the Usos tonight. And it was like the Usos were so new. Like, they hadn't really been around that long. And it was like a fart in church. You know what I mean? Like, he made it like it was a big deal. And it's just like, you're going to have to fight the Usos. And I always just think of the way he said Usos whenever I hear their name.
The Usos. Jack Tunney. We mentioned these other teams. And I would venture to say that none of those teams – were as over as the Dudley Boys at their height. They were main event level over for a period.
Sure.
and not only that, they do have the match catalog to back it up.
Yeah.
They're a major part of those giant TLC matches.
They are.
Which are three of them. I would say of those teams at the time, I like them a lot more as just a coherent team than, say, Edge and Christian, like in a regular tag team match. I find they thrive a lot more in that than Edge and Christian do. Hardys are probably better than them, which is why they're higher up. They have signature spots that were huge. And even into 03, I think the act was getting stale. But they were still producing good matches against kind of shitty opponents like La Resistance. So I think for those reasons, they deserve to be on the list. Do you have them on your list? I'm not sure what that yell was before.
It was "What's up?" I was doing. "What's up?" See how yes. played out it is? You didn't even pick up on it.
I know.
And they were still doing it, like 04. No, they weren't on my list. I briefly considered them, but I was tired of them, like, real early. Like, I liked them at first when they first came in. I kind of liked that they decided to reboot and like do the stuttering and the tie-dye. 2000, they're great. Into 01, okay. They're lagging behind the other teams for me as far as who I care about. By 02, I really didn't care. I felt that they felt really played out. They gave it a shot by splitting them up. Bubba did not get over at all when they tried to make him like Dusty Rhodes. Reverend Devon, fine idea, but he was limited as a solo guy. Just not that great in the ring. Cool little pop at Survivor Series I was at that year where they reunited. And then 03, you get all the shit where they're working for Morley and they're not, and they're kind of heel, but they're not. And like, I don't know, that stuff is all kind of blah. And then 04, all the shit with fucking Paul Bearer and all that, and Undertaker and all that stuff is awful. WrestleMania 20, they're in that stupid fucking four-way tag that just was so boring. And then
2 minutes. It's like 2 minutes long.
I do like them. It's still boring. I do like them with Spike at the end of the year. Like, that was really fun with
when
the boss.
Spike's their boss.
Yeah, like, that was really cool. But I think that was more Spike than them. And then I thought they were great with the ECW stuff. That was kind of their last hurrah with One Night Stand. And then they'd be gone. So, yeah, I mean, you know, there's stuff there.
Sounds like a lot of positives.
Yeah, sure. But I kind of also glossed over like 2.5 years where I said, which right. is like most of 02, 03, and 04. So there you go.
I'll be honest. I don't remember them from 02 at all.
Okay.
Like, I couldn't even tell you right. what they were doing.
That's how garbage they were. Nothing. They didn't do anything. They did. They split them. They were just kind of meandering. They had the feud with Spike and Taz that they lost.
Right.
And then they were in the four-way at WrestleMania. And then they split them up, and the singles pushes go nowhere. And then they reunite a Survivor Series. Like, that's pretty much it for the whole year. So it's a waste.
Yeah. But you see, for me, like, yeah, those pushes were failed, but their highs are just so high. Like, which is why, like, I couldn't in good conscience put them higher than I have.
What's their highest ranked non-gimmick match?
It's probably 3 stars.
Okay.
But they were always putting gimmick matches. You can't fault them for being put in gimmick matches.
No, we can.
No, you can't.
Yeah, because they couldn't wrestle non-gimmick matches.
But no, you know what, Vince? I would like to be in non-gimmick matches.
Actually, there is a good one. It's Rumble 2001, them against Edge and Christian. Is actually a really good non-gimmick match. Yeah,
It's okay.
Yeah.
Like, but I mean, I the first one I thought of was the table match with the Hardys at Rumble 2000, but it's also a gimmick match.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, like they're the king of the gimmick matches.
No, they are. They're really good. No, I mean, it's a numbers game for me. I'm not saying they don't deserve. Like, I'm not going to argue that your list is dumb because they're on it. Like some of the other people probably will talk about, but that them, I personally don't like them enough to put them in the top 100. I tried to stay pretty objective with this list.
Are you saying it when it came down to like your personal connection to them?
Look, I just don't have a personal connection. That's why I have fucking, you know, Akeem third. But
deserves it.
I don't know. The idea of them just bores me. And then we didn't even talk about this return run, which was forgettable.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Big pop at the Rumble.
Sure. Everyone gets a big pop at the Rumble.
But the biggest pop at that Rumble.
Right. Well, Mark Claire got a bigger pop at that Rumble. all right. So what numbers were those?
That was 93 and 92.
Okay, so here come my stretch of a few female competitors now. Not all of them, but just a few. With my 93 is Trish Stratus. Did we cover her making the cut?
Yeah, we did.
Okay, so.
But very briefly, because it was more of a tirade against women's wrestling.
Yes, that's correct.
And women
by
in
you,
general.
By it was, you.
It got dark.
Yeah, not by me. But Trish, probably my favorite female wrestler in WWF history. Started obviously a little shaky, worked herself up into one of the greats that they've had, at least until, you know, the modern era of great. I think there's something to be said for the way she carried and stood above that division for so many years. And I don't think it's just like she only stood amongst that division because it was so bad. Like, I still think, like, today she would stand out well. You know what I mean? Like, she would hold herself well, like, and with the women today, only because she was so quick at adapting and learning and growing as a wrestler. Like, I think she would have learned a lot from these women. You know, I don't know how you feel about, like, Alexa Bliss as a wrestler. I think Trish could be, like, on that level of what Alexa is today. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, but I also think Alexa's weak, so.
Okay, but.
Yeah. But yes.
She hangs, like, right? I mean, she's credible enough.
Yeah, she wouldn't stand out like a sore thumb today.
Right. Yeah, and this the level today is so high, right? So.
Yeah.
No, I think that she belongs on the list just because historical-wise, I thought at first she wasn't a great talker. She became a great talker when she became a heel. She has some really good jump-up moments, like specifically WrestleMania 20 when she turns on Jericho and goes to Christian. Her coming out with the lingerie for the wedding was like a great moment. The matches with Victoria were really good matches, the brawls that she had. Her matches with Lita, first women to main event Raw, like that was a big deal at the end of 04, the cage match and all that. She did set a lot of firsts, you know, from a female perspective. And by the end, I mean, she was just a dominant force on the roster, just as a heel or as a face. The Mickie James feud was really good, and I thought she had a lot of depth and just enough to squeeze in the back end here of my list.
Near Rikishi.
Yes. No, yes, near Rikishi, yes. Squeezed in the back end, yeah.
You guys get it?
Yeah, we get it.
Yeah, good.
All right, you did not have Trish, right? Because you hate the women.
I hate all women, but Trish specifically.
That's why you only have sons.
Look, I think I might have made the point on our making the cut that, like, her highest of highs, to me, I would say maybe besides the Mickie James match at WrestleMania, her highest of highs is just too low to make the list for me, like in terms of in-ring work. And I hear what you're saying about her as a character and this and that and the other thing. Like, but it, like when the bulk of your matches are are between
garbage matches.
Pardon me?
Oh my god, I said garbage matches.
Garbage matches.
You can say it.
Yeah, when the bulk are garbage.
Gimmick. Is what I meant to say, like garbage plunder matches.
Oh, I see. I see. You're trying to rationalize.
I'm trying to use your Dudley's bullshit against you. Yes.
Yeah. Well, you're trying to rationalize your decision to keep the guys with 3 5-star matches off in lieu of Trish Stratus. I got it. Cool. I'm following. Yeah, like her high end was just too low for me to put her on.
Yeah.
And like she was still part of the era where if her match was good, it was that was good for a women's match.
Yeah, but see, I think she transcended that a bit. Like, I think she has a few that are legit good.
I think you're right if you're talking the one with Mickie James.
Mickie, I think the Lita match.
No, it's not for me. Like, and that might be more
not even the Raw one.
No, not and again, that might be more on Lita than her. Like,
it might be more on you.
Maybe I'd like it on me, but I could.
She's even good in that 6-man at Fully Loaded, where she wasn't even a wrestler yet with the Hardys and TNA.
Yeah, but she's a sideshow in that match. She's not really a wrestler in that match. The punches are weak. They got better when she switched to forearms. You know, like there's still something off about the way she moved around the ring. She improved. Like I will never deny she didn't improve. But it was still like there's a huge difference between watching how she moved around the ring and how Charlotte moved around the ring.
Sure, that's evolutionary though. That's like any of the old people on the list, right? It's just from different eras. Whoever moved around the ring in the 1980s and how they move around the ring now. It's just completely different.
They're more athletic now, but they're not they don't look awkward or out of place. Like Hacksaw Jim Duggan moved around the ring a lot less gracefully than Seth Rollins, but he looked like he belonged in the ring and had the confidence to move around the ring. Whereas Trish Stratus and a lot of Trish Stratus is indicative of a lot of the women of that period, there was a tentativeness to their work that I didn't enjoy as much, and it took me out of the matches.
I think that's a fair criticism early on, but I think she did get past it.
I agree she got better. And I agree that if her competition were more up to her level, we might be having a different conversation.
Yeah, possibly. But she does some pretty good stuff with Molly, Victoria, Mickey.
Yeah, and I would even say, like, by 2003, like, her matches are generally never bad, but I still think they're in the vein of like, okay, good women's match. Like I would rate a men's match much lower.
We're just not going to get past this fucking point, so it's okay. We can move on.
Men's fucking point. You should sigh more. Sigh more.
So the one of the moments I want to throw out that I meant to mention for a great moment is WrestleMania 17, where she fights with Steph. And by the way, the Steph match was pretty good too.
Nah.
Yeah.
just didn't do it for me, but that might be Steph.
It might be you.
It might be me.
But the 17 moment's great.
Yeah, it's okay.
Yeah, okay. All right, so my 92, we'll stay with the female, so we can keep shitting on my list. And that is Sasha Banks. I thought about it a little bit higher. Is she on your list?
Yeah, way higher.
Okay, yeah. Great stuff in NXT. She's had good matches on the main roster, a couple of great, but there's so much downtime in the main roster too. What's the length of her peak run in NXT? It's fairly short, right? All things considered,
it's probably 8 months.
Yeah,
like from the time that like she finally. Well, no, that's not true. A bit before she finally beat Charlotte for the title.
It wasn't long before though, because I remember it wasn't too long before that where, like. Oh, she's a great character in the ring. You know, in the ring. Like, that was kind of the perception of her. And then I feel like it changed, like literally on, like, the eve of her winning the title is when everyone started to feel like she could be a legit champion enough to be, like, good enough to beat Charlotte.
She had an earlier match with Becky Lynch that's really excellent.
Yeah.
And I think it was that kind of started turning people around on her.
I mean, I will say that she may be hurt a little bit by my lack of depth of knowledge of some of those NXT matches. Like, I wasn't you know, for a couple of years there after the network launch, I can't say I was like an avid watcher. So I've seen the biggest ones, like the takeovers and all that. And obviously the Raw stuff with Charlotte. She also had a million chances at Charlotte too, like over the last 2 years. I haven't seen like a lot of variants, like besides Bayley and Charlotte, I guess, and that one Becky. I mean, I don't know, like who has she carried or proven that she's a great worker with besides having great matches with other great wrestlers? Like, has she had a great match with, like, Alexa or Natalya?
No,
or...
but she never really fought Alexa at, like, the height of her.
Yeah.
Like, when she was at the height of her prowess? Is that the word?
Yeah, prowess. Prowess.
Yeah. If she was at when she was at the height of that, she was basically exclusively fighting them.
Right.
So it's kind of a hard comparison at that point.
Yeah, hard.
Like, whereas, like, if we talk about Bayley at some point, like, she's got a lot more to the catalog.
Right. We're not going to talk about – we can talk about Bayley next if you want, because she's my 91.
Oh, okay, yeah. Okay, well, yeah. yeah, well, I guess we'll do
it's
that.
I told you I had a run of women here. These are the three in the row I have here. Then I have others higher. But I think Bayley is similar to Sasha, but to me she's got – the better, like, just moments and character, but has arguably had a much worse run on the main roster. Like, she doesn't have Sasha's stuff on the main roster. I just like her better as a actual character more than Sasha. And Sasha's character has been dog shit on the main roster, too. Like, she has not gone over the boss thing really at all on Raw. And I know it's indicative of Raw, but still, I mean, they're given chances. They've been given more time than ever for women. And you can compare that, too, to, like, Trish and others who would get, like, 3 minutes to really tell a match. And that's one of Stacy's big points on the females is of that era is that they didn't get the time. You know, like, now, like, someone like Sasha is getting long matches each and every week. And, again, indicative of the show. But I just don't have tons of great, like, standout memories of her besides like the big Charlotte matches that they hyped. And for Bayley, you get the big takeover matches, but what has she done, if at all, on the main roster?
Yeah, she's got her debut, which was huge.
Yeah. Which one? The first, and then she went back down, or when she came back?
The first. Like, when she was Sasha's partner at the pay-per-view.
At the SummerSlam.
At the SummerSlam. No, was it the next one? Night of Champions, I think?
Or Battleground, one of them.
Oh, yeah, one of the Battleground, I think you're right. And then I think her title win was pretty big, but it was kind of like it was weird when it happened, like, which probably hurt her. The women for me are so indicative of the writing process, and you're right. They get more time and mm-hmm. the matches are good, but they, I don't think they get more time storyline wise than the women used to. Like, I don't think they get more time, like, care wise in terms of, like, building their characters than the women used to. Like, I think there's a different philosophy in terms mm-hmm. of now they're looked at more like as wrestlers as opposed to.
Well, I think the difference is too they're assuming that everyone knows them from NXT, you know.
Yeah, which is so stupid.
Right. Like, so the women that came up in the 2000s, they had to develop because they didn't come in pre-developed. Well,
right.
Some did. Some got developed while on the roster. But no, they. Right, so now they're not given the time because they're assuming you already know that Sasha Banks is the boss and that you know Bayley's the hugger. Like, they figure that everyone knows this shit already, so they're not spending the time to build that out.
And I agree, they don't get that time. But there is something interesting about their characters. I feel they kind of just converged at exactly the right time in terms of who their characters were to really build something special, Bayley and Sasha Banks. Because that storyline for the NXT TakeOver, the first Brooklyn
mm-hmm. –
it is, I mean, it still elicits emotions from me watching it now, knowing the end result,
yeah.
just in terms of how beautifully it was built. And it's because they've never had a character like Bayley, who's this, I mean, I, for a female especially. Like, I mean, I guess what would be the closest be like Ricky the Dragon Steamboat? like, in terms of who the character was.
As
like,
a female?
Yeah. Like,
are you calling Steamboat a female?
Yeah, of course, but also, also, look, we're in 2017, okay? I'm not one to place, and we're not even 2017,
right?
When is this coming out? I'm not here to say who's a man, who's a woman, who's a battle helicopter. That's not my thing, okay?
Okay.
But what I do want to say is that she's a great character.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So again, I've. Like Sasha, maybe a little bit blind to some of the week-to-week of NXT. I was watching a bit more when she had her prime going, like she has a great match with Nia and all that.
yeah.
It's just her main roster. I don't know what her best match is. And she doesn't even have the benefit of the Great Mania match. Like, the other three women, Charlotte, Becky, and Sasha, had the Mania 32 match, which was pretty good. The Mania 33 was definitely a step down, the one that she was in. So she isn't even at that on her resume that the other three have. So, I mean, maybe it sounds like I'm saying like Sasha should have been a notch higher, but I think Bayley's character in NXT was so much better than Sasha. So that's why I ended up moving her one spot higher. But there, I wanted to put the three there because to me, Trish was the beginning of the evolution. And then Bayley and Sasha are, you know, obviously great and deserve to be in the top 100 of all time. I just don't think there's enough there yet for them to get much higher. I think I have two other females higher. So
Trish sucks.
You suck. all right. Who's your 91?
Oh, 91. Okay. 91.
Well, Bayley, is she a lot higher?
Yeah, she's much higher. And okay. I'll just bring up a match later when we talk about
all
it.
Right.
My 91 is the Samoan Bulldozer.
Ah.
Umaga.
Yes. I have him a bit higher. Not too much, but.
I love Umaga.
Yeah.
He's amazing.
Yes.
For me, like, I kind of had a hard and fast rule that if I think a match is 5 stars, you make the list.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he makes the list on the strength of that John Cena match.
Yeah.
In the Royal Rumble, which is an incredible match. Like, mm-hmm. one of the best matches of the 2000s.
And it might be the best match of all time in WWF history.
You think? You think that high, eh? I guess you could make the argument. And, I mean,
it's in the conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. And what does that say about it when you think of all the great matches they've had? So I think he makes the list on that match alone. But that being said, he's really solid in everything else he does.
Mm-hmm.
His ring work was superb. He always looked like he was hurting you. Like that run, like as JBL, a tribute to Uncle Umaga every time the Usos did it until it became Rikishi for some reason. Why would they credit Umaga instead of their father? Anyway,
yeah.
Strange thing to do.
Well,
but
depends on the day one ish that day.
You're right. Fucking day one ish. So I loved his ring work. I thought his character was very outdated, but he played it so well that it never bothered me.
Well, if you remember too, that was one of the big things. Like Samoa Joe didn't want to come because, you know, they thought they'd turn him into like an old school Samoan character. And so they gave it to Umaga instead. And guess what? It fucking worked because this had a murder guy. This is his first paper who destroys Ric Flair.
Yeah.
His offense is brutal. And we knew that, by the way. Because he showed it as part of 3-Minute Warning. Like, that
right.
gets forgotten with Umaga. But he was damn good in those, like, squashes and beatdowns all the time,
yeah.
too. They murdered people. They killed Lillian Garcia on that Raw. Like, I mean, they just, like, destroy people with that offense in 02. And there's some hidden little matches in there, too, that are pretty good. So, like, that one at Survivor Series 02, like I mentioned, where they fight against the Dudleys and stuff. So, there is some good stuff in there that they had throughout. And then Umaga himself, the Flair squash I really like. And then he builds momentum throughout, right? He kills Kane, kills who and who and who until he gets to Cena. And then the Forgotten match, which I had forgotten how good it was when Scott and I rewatched it like a year and a half ago or so. New Year's Revolution, the first Cena match. Because everyone kind of always remembers the finish, which is kind of a cheap one where Umaga hits the buckle and Cena rolls him up. But when you go back and watch the story of that match, it sets up the Rumble beautifully because Umaga had him dead to rights. He destroys him in that match, and Cena barely escapes by the skin of his teeth, making it very clear that Umaga deserves a rematch, and putting him in this last man standing is a way to almost make it like we're going to really prove who's the best here because there's no flukes, no false finishes, none of this bullshit. Like, we're going to really see if Cena can outlast this monster. And then he gets past Cena. And he has he's put into the Battle of Billionaires, which is a big spot for him. Like that's
huge.
Really cool that they gave him that spot. So he, obviously showed a lot about his abilities and what they thought of him. And I thought that match was like fine. It's carried obviously by all the Trump and Vince stuff, but the match itself is fine. But then he's a big part too because he's with Vince for like the next 3 months or so with all the ECW
he's
stuff.
Rag Vince.
Yeah, I mean that's a big push for him. And then later on, he has the Jeff Hardy shit, I thought, which was all really good. Or was that before? Was that 06, 07, or 08? I can never keep it all straight. When he has the IC title feud. With Hardy? They have the IC title feud.
With Hardy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And then, of course, the Batista match at 24. I think he's actually a little underrated. Like, I like that match. I think they really beat the shit out of each other. At WrestleMania 24. So, lots of good stuff. I agree with you, a great wrestler that took a character that could have been real bad or really bombed and made it work really, really well. And he also did good stuff with Santino, too. That was I knew there was something else in 08. Or is that 07? Hang on.
That was 07.
Yeah, okay. That's pretty good, too. So wait, was Hardy definitely 07 then?
Let's figure it out.
I'm looking through here. I didn't think it was 06 because he feuded with Kane for a while in 06.
He fights him at the Great American Bash 07.
Hardy? Okay. All right, yeah, so it wasn't there then. All right, so he's got the stuff with Santino. He's got the stuff with Hardy, which is really good. So, anyway, he's great.
He's a guy I wish stuck around longer.
Oh, for sure. In life as well.
Yeah.
Did you vanish again?
No.
Okay.
No, I was taking a moment of silence for Umaga.
Okay.
You mentioned his death.
I know. Well, I wish he was still alive.
So I took a nice, huge pause.
Okay.
Huge like Rikishi's ass.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
All right. So anything else on Umaga?
He's great. He's higher on your list?
He is higher on my list, yes.
We're proceeding as though this is going really well.
All right. So since we're hitting the next batch here, maybe I should go first. How about that?
Well, yeah. Well, you got 91. Are you doing 91?
I did 91.
Oh,
Bailey.
No, you did. It was Bailey. Yeah. Switch it up.
Okay. So?
So who my number 90?
Okay, so my number 90, now we're hitting a little bit of a tag stretch for me, but not really, just next two anyway.
Wait, a tag stretch?
No,
you
just
chastise
one.
Me
it's only one tag team. There's only one tag team right here.
Fuck you, mother.
That is starting with Big E Langston. Is he on your list?
I have him at 89.
Okay, beautiful. Let's talk about him. So Big E, all right, well, go ahead, you talk. I just talked for a while on Umaga. I rambled a lot.
Well, for me, I mean, the biggest strength is obviously the New Day run. New Day is a pretty important team and faction in this world,
mm-hmm.
wrestling entertainment. I think that he's the worker of the team.
I know, which is crazy, huh?
Yeah, especially considering he has the weirdest body of anyone.
Such a weird body. And you know what's funny? Because I never took him seriously, like during the doll stuff and everything. When everyone kept kind of putting him over as like giving him a shot and stuff.
Yeah,
the body was so fucking weird that I could never like get behind him as like a legit. Threat and the tights don't help either, like the thin strings that glass, you know, there's like 6 feet between his shoulders and his waist. It's weird.
Who has bigger breasts, him or Maria Kanellis?
He doesn't have big breasts, they're long
and wide.
He's got like the Kali breasts.
He's who's more likely to produce milk, him or Great Kali?
Jinder Mahal.
Oh yeah, probably Jinder Mahal.
He probably already has.
Yeah.
He's definitely lactated. Probably in the ring.
Oh, yeah. He's fed someone.
Yes. Probably the Singhs.
That's why he's so revered in India.
He feeds the masses. I shall feed the billions.
With my pecs.
So, Big E, obviously a great promo guy, too. Legit, really funny. I'm glad he found his niche with New Day.
And it's his body. Like, his body is what started it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. In the present, you're right, because the grinding and the tit dances and all that. But the presence he has, too, is so great. Like, you can feel that he's the star of the three when they're out there.
Yeah.
Really good matches, too. Solo as well, like that one. Was it Rusev? That they had a really good match.
Well, they had a series. They had a pretty good series. Like, the whole series was quite good.
Hmm. And then some really good tag work at the New Day. I mean, he's always in the ring. Like, it's never really Kofi and Xavier. It's either him and Xavier or him and Kofi. So
if it's Kofi and Xavier, they lose.
Right. So, I mean, he's in all the big matches that they've had.
And he really buys into the concept. I would not that the others don't, but, like, he's doing the clapping when he's got the guy in the abdominal stretch.
Right.
And, like, he's really the glue that holds that thing together, I find.
I agree. And I hope they do break them up eventually, but don't do the Hackney Eye, like, one goes heel or whatever. You know, like, they should just all kind of go their own way and still... I mean, actually, if I'm them, I draft Big E apart from them, so there's no split that is separated.
Yeah.
And then keep Kofi and Woods together as a team.
Yeah, I don't want to live in a world where they're not friends.
Right. There should be no turn. Big E should just, like, go to Raw as a solo act. And I think he's got great potential. I think they do see it in him because they've kept him through a lot of this stuff and they put him in New Day as a vehicle. So, I think Big E's great. I mean, I think he's clearly one of the best 100 they've ever had. When you look at the whole package, he's a guy that I would hope if we do this again in like 5 years or something that he's way up the list.
Do you see him becoming a legit single star though?
Yeah, I think if he gets the right push. I mean, he's really charismatic. He's a good-looking dude. And he's jacked up. He can work. I think if they gave him a shot, he could definitely do it. Like, I don't think it would be unbelievable in any way if he were to get a world title run.
Because, like, wasn't one of the rumors a few years ago that, like, the choice to be the next guy came down to, like, him and Roman Reigns?
Yes, I do remember that. Yeah, I do remember that, yeah. So that makes you think, then, they view him at that level.
Yeah. It was probably the body. They're like, no, we can't. It's too weird.
Yeah. But he is super charismatic. Like, he's a guy that could go on TV and do the radio spots and all that shit and, like, be believable in the role. Like, he's really good at that. So I think that's a big piece of why he could possibly pop it someday, too. How old is he? Do you know?
E?
Yeah. I'm going to look it up. Where are you?
You know what I bet? I bet he's 31. Looks really good at... He probably looks really good in a suit.
He does. I feel like he looks.
Yeah.
He's 31, so plenty of time.
What's his weak point? It's the weightlifting solo act? When he'd come out and hit the chalk in his hands? And
yeah, because he's fine with Dolph. Like, the tag match at 29. And,
yeah.
Like, he does good stuff with Dolph. Yeah, and even with AJ, like, the whole tiny white girl, big black dude stuff they had going on.
Did they hook up in the storyline, or was it there was a ruse?
It was always kind of implied, right?
Right.
It was always kind of like a maybe, because then they had all stuff with Caitlyn and all that. No, I mean, I think it was kind of like Farouk and Sonny, where they didn't really say it that they banged, but it was.
But Farouk was banging her.
Right. It was pretty implied.
Bret Hart was jealous.
I mean, I guess just that stretch from like late 13 until. I don't know, because he had the IC title, right, for a bit, too?
Yeah, but he was not a great IC champion.
No. So that's probably his weak spot, was the IC title run and then into the New Day. And I mean, the New Day by, what, like mid-14. So he's got like a down year, probably 13 to 14. But even then, I don't think he has anything like awful. He's got the match with Rusev and Money in the Bank. That's in 14, which is pretty good. So
it just really depends on how good you feel about New Day.
Right.
Because I, for one, really like New Day at first when they were heels. And grew really tired of them as faces. But then lately they've almost come full circle for me. Like, now they're just a solid act.
Right. And I mean, they have a lot of down raw segments, but yeah. I mean, how many people on this list can get the chunks of time on Raw that he got and make everyone pop, especially when you're relying on other people? It's not like in Austin where he's out there just kind of doing his own thing for 20 minutes a week. he's got two other guys. They got to come up with a brand new bit. They got the ice cream thing over. They got the Bootios over. I mean, he got fucking Bootio cereal over to become real cereal. Like, I mean, that's a big fucking thing, you know?
And it's on his booty.
Right.
I feel like we've talked a lot about asses tonight. Tell me I'm wrong.
How's that for your sigh?
That's good. That's a good one. I was really annoyed. Like, it felt real.
It was real. All right, who's your 90?
My 90 is the Russian bear, Ivan Koloff.
I think you're going to say Rusev.
No, he didn't make my list, sadly.
Me neither.
I know. And that makes me sad, because I love me some Rusev. Like, we should be talking about Rusev as like a multiple-time champion right now.
It's disgraceful.
Or at the very least, the guy who was champion for all of 2017. Ivan Koloff, when I went back as part of this project, I'm sure I've mentioned before, I watched as many house shows from the 70s and 80s and any 60s I could as well. And Ivan Koloff was a guy who really struck me as a consistent, number one, a consistently over heel, but also a pretty decent in-ring worker.
Yeah.
I imagined him to be a lot more lumbering than he ended up being.
He moved pretty well.
Yeah, like, I enjoyed his ring work. I thought he was a very good, consistent character. And, I mean, if you look back on that moment where he beats Bruno, like, apparently the whole arena goes silent, which is amazing. So I think there's something there with Ivan Koloff. And when he kept coming up, like when he was wrestling either Backlund or even when he's wrestling Pedro Morales, and I don't really love Pedro Morales, but I thought he was usually a very entertaining part of the match.
Right.
And I think being a champion during that time is a lot more valuable than being a champion today. Like, it took balls to put the title on him in the middle of the Cold War against Bruno Sammartino. So I figured he deserved inclusion on the list. And being a world champion, he got up a bit higher than someone like Umaga, say.
Yeah. No, I don't have him ranked. But I do agree with all the stuff you said. I think he is kind of underrated or overlooked. I do think you think of him as like a lumbering Russian, you know, like a Nikolai or something. He was still really good into his NWA time. Like even in the 80s, you know what I mean? Like, he was still working. He was the worker of that fucking trio. It's like guys younger, half his age.
Yeah.
You know, he's out there carrying the fucking matches. Again, just a guy I probably haven't seen enough of. And I can't just look at this list and say, oh, I'd easily knock them off for Ivan. But a guy that I fully endorse being on lists and hoping he gets a bunch of votes, because he is really good from what I've seen.
Yeah, and I was just pleasantly surprised watching him.
Hope you've enjoyed this episode of Making the Cut. Make sure you stay tuned as we continue to work our way through our list at some sort of period of time here on PlaceToBeNation.com. Follow all of our podcast feeds on iTunes, PlaceToBeNation Wrestling, PlaceToBeNation Pop, Pro Wrestling Only, and you can get each and every thing you may need in your pop culture world, especially when it comes to this project. So that's it. Talk to you next time.
Yeah!
Okay, there you go.